We did a lot of running in a 96 degree heat, full leather jacket, sliding down those hot, beautiful roofs in Budapest. Mm. And then in the train station as well, sliding down the middle of that thing that every kid wants to do.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello and welcome to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Tun, and with me is my co-host, Mike Messina.
What's up?
Today we have a special guest, Cece Ice. She's known for her work in the MCU as a double for Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet Witch and Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. She is the owner of Space Cat Stunts Incorporated and Apex Entertainment Studios and The Chamber Gym. Mike, what were some big takeaways from this episode?
Yeah, so one thing I really loved about this episode is hearing about Cece's sort of early influence and her early action heroes in Sarah Connor from T2 specifically, as well as Ripley from Aliens, the sequel specifically, how they're both badass female characters and how now it's sort of come full circle and she is that badass heroine on screen for inspiring some other little girls out there who are looking up to her. And then from an action filmmaking perspective, it was really interesting hearing about how they were able to take her telepathic magic moveset as Scarlet Witch and then blend that with some traditional hand-to-hand martial arts sort of combat and then get some really unique exchanges out of that, especially for that Infinity War fight scene.
Yeah, so another thing I started to notice was the journey seemed to be a really big theme throughout this episode, the journey to get to where she is now. And I really enjoyed hearing about her starting out at Six Flags St. Louis as a magician's assistant, kind of falling in love with the magic of illusion, as you'd say. And then that kind of translating into the stunt world and then her falling in love with the movie magic aspect of it. There's a lot there, as well as her moving across the country to where she is now in Atlanta. And finally, I think my favorite part was her balancing her relationship with Justin Eaton, who is another stuntman in the industry. He did a lot of work on Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but their relationship is very interesting because they're away for a majority of the time, but they still have that great balance. So yeah, without further ado, here is Cece Ice. All right, Cece, how's everything going?
It's going well.
Should we say Cece, Cecilia? What is it again?
Ooh,
I know Mike and I were talking about it. Yeah.
Cecilia is my full name, and I'm only ever called that when I'm in trouble with my parents. So Cece's good. That's what I've been called my whole life, and it stands for my first and middle name, Cecilia, and then my middle name, which I won't divulge here at this moment.
Okay, nice. Another thing Darren and I were wondering, we saw you have Space Cat Stunts as a big project of yours.
Yeah, that's actually my company. That's one of my, I have two companies. One is my stunt company that when I get hired for films, they hire me through my company of Space Cat Stunts, Inc. And it's because I'm a little kitty cat flying through the air all the time. And so that's me, the little cat, the little space cat. And then my other company is Apex Entertainment Studios. And that's the two studios that I have here in Atlanta, Georgia, that are training facilities for stunts, but also they can be rented out as filming locations for different studio projects and things like that.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So did your love of flying through the air like a cat come first, or did your love of cats come before that?
It's chicken or the egg, man.
Okay. Yeah.
They simultaneously happen at the same time, I think. But yeah. I've always loved kitty cats and doggies, all animals really, but for some reason, a very strong connection to cats.
Mm.
I have lots of brothers and sisters, and I'm one of the younger siblings. So my brothers were always like, we'll have Cece try it first. And if she survives, we'll try it. So that was with my five brothers. That was sort of the thing. So,
and actually, I think later on, we'd love to get into some specifics for your different scenes and your different works. But first, you know, going right off that, can you give us a little bit of a rundown of your life journey, how it brought you from where you were before to your stunt work now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in a very small town in the Midwest in Missouri. in the farmlands. Wonderful people there, amazing, honest, hardworking folks. And I grew up in a little town that didn't really have a film scene. So, you know, I grew up in the country, climbing trees and falling in the creek and challenging my brothers to all kinds of, you know, battles in the backyard. But I would watch films like, you know, when I was young, the films that really had an impression on me were Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. She was this badass woman kicking butt. And then when Terminator 2 came out with Linda Hamilton and she was like, you know, doing those pull-ups and like,
oh yeah,
just handling business, you know, I was like, I want to do that. What is that? You know, because we don't in the Midwest, I didn't know about stunts. I didn't know that was a thing. And so I was very lucky to grow up in even though it was a smaller high school, a wonderful high school that really supported the arts. And so I had some wonderful theater instructors as well as chorus and all these things that really helped me explore my artistic side. And that's where it started for me, was on stage and in live shows and those sorts of things, because that was all that was available to me in the Midwest. Mm. And as I explored the theater and that sort of side of things, I found out more about film, and I fit more with that as I grew. That's where I wanted to be. And so I tried to make my journey to like connect the dots to get there. And it seems such a journey to get there from like tiny town Missouri to like Hollywood. It's like, how does that even happen? But yeah, so it started in a very small town with wonderful people that supported my dreams, really. And my family, my mother, my father, all my brothers and sisters. So I had a lot of support.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned sort of having your brothers kind of push you through some, essentially what is stunt work at home when you were a kid.
And did I hear correctly, it was one of 13?
Yeah, I'm one of 13 brothers and sisters. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I have 5 brothers and 7 sisters, and I'm one of 13 total. And I often say it was sort of like the Hunger Games, like whoever survived. No, but we did all make it to adulthood. I love my brothers and sisters. They're all very inspiring. Mm-hmm. We all have their own lines of work. We all do something different. Every single one of us is different in a beautiful way. So 5 brothers, and usually it was like, hey, let's take this trash bag and use it as a parachute and jump down the stairs and see who lives. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I was the smallest, so I went first. So that's sort of the way it was growing up, was like, yeah, who can climb the highest in this tree? I dare you. And I was like, well, I'll take that dare.
Was there one stunt as a kid that was like the most memorable to you?
Limbo toboggan. Limbo sledding, basically. Okay. We call it limbo toboggan, but we grew up
limbo
in a yard.
Limbo sledding, wow.
Yeah, limbo sledding, basically. You hold two people. This is a terrible admittance, but my mother probably doesn't know about this story. But anyway, you know, 2 siblings would hold a rope across the yard, and one sibling would get on the very long sled that we call a toboggan and slide careening down the very steep hill in our yard. And if you could slide under it without getting clotheslined off of it, then you won. So that was one idea that we came up with, you know, kids.
Yeah.
So that was one of the most memorable, I think, of that scenario.
Yeah, it definitely sounds memorable. Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, your brothers and sisters, like knowing like the profession you're in now, how do they feel about that? Like, especially going through all that at a young age.
They say they're very proud. So, and
yeah,
they really did inspire me in many ways. And also with the creativity of coming up with different scenarios and plans. And it was, you know, we were creating stories in the backyard of pirates coming and crashing onto the shores. You know, we all had such an imagination together because, you know, there wasn't a lot of money. So growing up with that many siblings, you sort of create your own fun.
Mm.
And I think that was very important for my upbringing to where I am today, was the use of imagination, the use of creativity.
Oh, yeah.
What do you have that you can make something out of that could be exciting, even if you don't have a lot? You don't have to have the best gear, the best things. You have this, which is greater than so many, which is greater than anything, is your imagination.
Mm.
So yeah, they're all very proud, and I'm all very proud of them as well and all the places they've gone. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we heard, speaking of sort of movie magic, we heard that you were working as a magician's assistant at one point. Did that
was like it Illusion Flags, Magic? If I read that correctly.
Okay. Yes. Six Flags right. St. Louis. Woo! Live show. Six shows a day, 6 days a week.
Wow. Nice.
And it was a great time, actually. It was when I was my senior year of high school when I started, and then a couple years into college as well, the live show experience. And that's where I experienced stunts for the first time in the actual sense of stunts. As I said, growing up in Missouri, you don't really get to experience that a lot. And well, we have some stage combat and things like that, but live show stunts, trap doors and all kinds of magical illusions that you're dealing with and dancing with swords and there's fire sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Making the magic and making the timing with your partner. That was another thing that I learned was work with a partner, timing with a partner. That's the real magic. Mm. And, you know, with the magician and the assistant, the timing is everything for to create that beautiful magic, which is amazing to me still. So yeah, that was my first endeavor and I fell in love with it. And I was like, I want to do more of this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, St. Mm-hmm. Louis is where I started.
Yeah.
And I ended up in Branson, Missouri, because apparently I was called the kamikaze because I was willing to try any illusion. I was like, yeah, I'll try that sure.
Oh, wow.
three people got injured on that one, but I'll try it. And then it was fine.
Yeah.
So. You mentioned moving around a lot throughout your life and your career.
Yeah.
What is it like making those, not small moves from like one city to another, those big, big, from one side of the country to the other kind of thing?
If you dwell on it, it can be overwhelming. I don't know if this is wise to say, but I just didn't think about it. I just packed my little Subaru and drove from Newport, Rhode Island, where I was in a theater company at the time. And I saved my money to like go to California. I just literally packed my little Subaru with everything that it could hold. I didn't have family members in LA. I had acquaintances that I had met through a few different shows that had come to the New England area where I was at. A couple of cameramen who were awesome and let me crash on their couch. And, you know, then just I packed everything up, drove out there. I didn't tell my mom that I lived in my car at first.
Oh, really?
Out there.
You said I have a place.
It was a great place, my car. But then also various couches, you know, a couple weeks here at this friend's house. And then in my car, I was like eating cans of soup out of my car. Sounds ridiculous now. I just went for it. And then I problem solved along the way. You know, hey, I need a job. So what jobs are available to me? I will do this to save the money to do that, to then meet people here, to open the door there. And thankfully, and with many blessings of, I don't want to talk about spirituality towards anyone else, but my own spirituality, many blessings, a path was created for me that guided me through. And here I am. But yeah, I moved from Rhode Island to LA just in time for the writer's strike back then.
Yeah.
And so that was, could have planned better, but it all worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, it still worked out. Yeah.
It still worked out, but it was a little hairy there for a while. But I'm thankful to the friends that let me stay on their couches and guided me and through a job or, you know, through, they were like, oh, here's a PA job. I was like, I'll take it, you know, anything at all. So that's how I ended up working on Big Brother seasons 8, 9, and 10 as like first a PA and then an art department set dresser just to get on set and get money and meet people in the industry. Yeah. So there it is.
Wow. It's all a journey.
Impressive. Yeah. A lot of work.
And like, a lot of work.
Speaking of TV appearances, I believe you had a Ghost Hunters appearance at one point. Is that, can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah. I did.
Very curious.
It was at the Beechwood Mansion, right?
Yes, it was. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So that was actually, the cameramen that I met that lived in California were the cameramen on that show. And so basically I had been working at the theater company, the Beechwood Theater Company. My friend Patrick Grimes had hired me and Lewis had hired me when I graduated university just to get on the East Coast and have a great time in the theater company. And while I was there, I know I'm not here to say one way or the other for other people, but for me, I had some experiences there that were a little bit unexplainable at the time. And so I had spoken to Patrick, my boss at the time, and just relayed that information to him. Later on, a few other people had experiences as well. So they contacted the Ghost Hunters to come and sort of see what was up scientifically or otherwise. And so I met them that way. And I met with some of the camera guys and had a great time. And then they said, you should get out to LA. And I was like, all right, this is it. So after that year, that's when I decided to make the move. But it was a great time on Ghost Hunters. They were really nice. But that was a long time ago. And actually, my husband, who grew up in Boston, We almost met like so many times. He's a stuntman as well, Justin Eaton. And saw that episode long time ago and was like, oh, who's that girl? Like so long ago. And then just like a month ago, it came out because my brother posted it. And he was like, that was you. Oh my God.
Oh, really? Wow.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He watched that show like religiously, apparently. I didn't know that.
Wow. So he's been a fan of yours for a while.
He's been a very big fan
even
of mine.
Even before way meeting you. Yeah.
Awesome. And speaking of, how has married life been so far? And congratulations as well.
Congrats.
Thank you. It's amazing. It's been a whirlwind. Literally, we got married in May and then I left for 2 months. I was like, bye for a film. And then I just came back for, I think, 2 weeks. And then I go again for another month. So yeah, basically over the last year, we found out that I've been away from home for about 9 months total of the year and only at home for about 3 months. And that includes being in this beautiful house that we finally purchased. I've only seen it a little bit. He's seen it a lot because he keeps getting hired right here in town. Many blessings for the jobs. I'm always thankful. But yeah, so a married life has been amazing, but just we would like more of it together.
That makes sense. So.
Does it often strike you that that sort of, you know, career effect on your relationship makes it a lot different of a dynamic than most people?
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, he has a friend who is a pilot who goes away, but even his friend was surprised when I went to the UK for 6 months, well, 5 months for filming. And his friend asked, so when does CC get back? And Justin was like, well, April. And he was like, wait, but it's like December right now. And so even other people in other jobs, barring the military, obviously they do much more than we do when they're apart. And I have huge respect for the military, those who have served for us and continue to serve. But in many other jobs, that is a very shocking to other people as well. We have such a good dynamic, though. We communicate a lot. That's really what's so important with a long distance situation is communication, openness, vulnerability. And we both have that in spades. Though we love to be together, we don't have a lot of fights when we're apart because we're so communicative. And that's a lot of where the problems happen is misunderstandings and things. But yeah, we actually were, when we were just friends, we were on every show together.
Yeah. It also helps that he's like in the same profession as well.
Yeah. He understands. Yeah. I understand if things change. But it was so funny. As soon as we started dating, we were not on shows together again. So it was really, really funny that like our whole friendship on every show as a core team member. And then it was like, bye.
Nice. Again, worked out in the end.
It's all good.
Definitely the journey.
It's definitely the journey. And it's also discovering along the way, you know, we didn't just come into knowing how to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. That was something that we learned along the way. And we were both willing to meet each other halfway. I think that's the difference with all these long distance sort of lifestyles in the film industry and in other industries that are similar. Is learning and being open enough to meet someone halfway. You know, what are their needs? What are my needs? And not one person is doing all the compromising. And that's also the same with work, ironically, when you have a good team, you know, meeting people halfway, contributing, finding what works best for the film or the scene, and not just trying to be egotistical about and say, my idea is the best idea. It's like, well, what's the best idea for this moment, for this scene, for this actor? Etc. So it's all about working as a team, even in your relationship.
Yeah. Staying positive seems to be a big part of that too, it seems.
Yes.
And you seem like a very positive person as well. Yeah.
I can be, but also I do struggle as well. I want to be honest with that as well.
Right.
You know, everything you see on Instagram is everyone's highlight reel and you forget, you forget that no one's perfect and everyone has struggles. And in this industry, it does create self-doubt a lot, you know, just in general. It's a very visual arts. So you're critiquing yourself constantly. And hopefully it's in a positive way to get better and not in a tear yourself down sort of way or tear others down or compare yourself to others in a negative way. You can have healthy competition or healthy growth or healthy watching someone and their techniques to learn from it and not just to outdo them. You don't want to outdo them. They have amazing techniques that they can share with you. And likewise, you want to lift each other up. And
it's collaborative.
Yeah. It's collaborative because it can drown you if you let it be the negative version of that. And I'm not perfect. I sometimes get in a very negative space of my own, like I'm not good enough, or I need to train more, or gosh, look at that kick was mm-hmm. terrible. It's like, I need to remember to celebrate many things that I have accomplished and know that I can do better, but not to tear myself down. And that goes for everybody. I think we can easily slip into that with this industry. Positivity is very important, and towards each other too. That's huge.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And like you said, keeping in mind growing and moving forward and getting better, working at those things, like you said about communication before, or if it is that positive outlook here too.
Exactly. And also being honest with yourself and being loving towards yourself. Like if you have a bad day, don't guilt trip yourself about it later. Just say, wow, I had a right to be in that space at that moment. And that was true mm-hmm. and real. I don't want to linger there, but I also don't want to make myself feel mm-hmm. crappy because I was there. Everybody has the ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, just let yourself be honest with your emotions and then move on and move forward from that, mm-hmm. I think is, and I'm human, man. It's a hard one.
Yeah, a lot of people are very hard on themselves. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Love yourself, people.
And it was interesting to me before, too. I know you mentioned Sarah Connor and mentioned Ripley as two big, movie heroines.
Yeah.
And I think you specifically said not Alien, but Aliens, and then not Terminator, but T2.
Yes.
And,
specifically T2, because
not a lot of people catch that, but it is.
Yeah.
The first ones are amazing. They set the stage. Not deter about that. The first mm-hmm. ones of both of those are incredible, but not a lot of people catch it. It's the second one of both of those movies because the growth of the character, the female mm-hmm. character, is shown in such a way where they were at first something in a space where they were being attacked or being, just surviving. And then in the second one, they sort of take it into their own and they're like, no, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to come at this head on. And literally, Ripley is saving the Marine getting him up, get up, soldier, and like dragging him out of there and getting into the big machine and get away from her, you bitch, all that stuff. I mean, that's amazing growth in just survival to that. And that spoke to me as a female, and also my mother being so strong in her ways too was a big inspiration to me. So I'm thankful for that.
And so now with your film work, with those Marvel characters, especially the Scarlet Witch, the Black Widows, and again, especially being part of a huge franchise where they're returning for film after film, do you feel like you sort of hit a similar echelon of character with those?
I am so thankful to be a part of this amazing tapestry, if you will. I never feel like, oh yeah, I made it,
this is the life.
I don't ever want to seem egotistical in a way, or there's always growth, there's always more to learn, there's always ways that I can be better and new heights to reach. I'm incredibly grateful for the journey that I've had with Lizzie, with Wanda, Scarlet Witch, that sort of story, as well as I'm ever grateful to Heidi Moneymaker for allowing me to be a small part of a Black Widow.
Huge inspiration.
She is incredible. Definitely. Mickey Facchinello is incredible. They're just, inspirations to me. And I'm thankful to be a very small part of that story as well. But I hadn't really thought about it. It was just going. It was just happening. And only recently did Justin remind me, he's so good at that. He goes, babe, you doubled two incredibly fierce women, and that's something to be proud of and to take a moment and celebrate that and say, that's amazing. But there's always more to go and there's more to do. I have to admit though, the very first time I put on the Scarlet, the Wanda outfit, I did a little dance in my I'll never not
you
be embarrassed about
to.
That. Yeah, I'm not embarrassed about that. I'll never be embarrassed about that. I was like, oh, I'm a superhero. It was more like meow, meow, meow. That was my happy kitty dance. In the
I don't think anyone can blame you for that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and on brand too with the cat related dancing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So yeah.
So my cat, I have a happy kitty dance that many have experienced and know. So that when I'm on set or something's going well, I break out the happy kitty dance and everyone is wowed. So.
Nice, nice. You break the glass. Yeah. You press.
I'm
the button.
Just saying. I press the button. And it's like time for the cat dance. Meow meow meow. Yeah.
They all know it's coming.
Yeah, they do. When they see the paws. They know.
Yeah. And I guess speaking of like inspirations, I was reading a little bit about your grandfather, Clyde Wilbur Ice, I think it was.
Yes.
Aviation pioneer, pilot, and wing walker.
Yes.
You could talk a little bit about him and I guess how he inspired you. Maybe you take after him, like his adventurous side. Yeah.
I actually do. Not many people talk about it. So he's my great-grandfather. Yeah, my great-grandfather, yeah. Clyde Wilbur Ice. And also my grandfather, Cecil, also a pilot, followed in the same line. And I'm actually named after Cecil, my grandpa Cecil. Cecilia, but also, you know, my great-grandfather, Clyde, the father of aviation in South Dakota. There's a book about him, as you see. He inspired me for sure. And he basically, he was a stuntman. Wing walking was a stunt back in the days. And he barnstorming and doing all kinds of crazy, amazing things with planes when they were brand new to the world and letting people experience the joy of flight as well, you know, taking people up in the plane and doing some fun stuff. But yeah, he absolutely inspired me. I didn't always get a chance to visit with him as much as I wanted to before he passed away. I got to have a chance to visit with my grandfather, Cecil, a little more, who equally has some incredible stories about times when he crash landed and should never have survived. You know, like at one time I was sitting with him and I said, you know, what was one of the craziest things that ever happened to you when you were flying? He goes, well, super cash. Well, there was that one time when the tail caught on fire. Yeah, I was a little concerned then. I was like, the tail of the plane caught on fire? Yeah. He was just like,
it's like slightly concerning.
Yeah. But he had, they had both seen it all and kept their calm through it, which also spoke to me about when stunt performing. There are things that we do, and there are many other stunt performers who have done even more dangerous stunts than I ever have. And I highly respect my brothers and sisters in the stunt profession who have done so much more than me. But when it comes down to a dangerous stunt and you know, you respect the boundaries of what you're doing in the sense of, you know, we got to do this right.
Right.
And there are things that could go wrong, but you don't dwell on that part because you know that your team has done as many things to keep it as safe as possible. And then you just keep calm and you do your job because that really keeps an open mind. That helps you focus on what's important and that helps you do the job that you've come to do. So my great-grandfather, my grandfather telling me stories about when things went wrong, they survived by keeping their heads on their shoulders and keeping calm and problem solving, you know, exactly what they could do to make this successful in the sense of a crash landing or a this or a that. And also during the stunt performing, wing walking, what do I need to do to successfully complete this? So it's not just about being daredevils. It's not just about being adrenaline junkies or anything like that. It's actually you're using your brain and you're making sure that you're doing something that you can be successful in completing, no matter the dangers, no matter the situation. So they inspired
that discipline
me quite
with
a bit.
It too.
Yes, yeah, the discipline with it. Because also he did a lot of training for that. You didn't just, I'm just going to walk in wings and fly around. You know, it took some time to work up to that, you know. But what an inspiration. And the crazy Ice family. Here we go.
Yeah. And I don't know if I read this correctly. He taught himself how to fly.
Like, yes, he did.
And that's
So he bought
crazy.
The plane before knowing how to fly it.
Yeah.
And then sat there as you read that snippet, he sat there and looked at all the mechanisms and figured out how to fly it. Wow. And also didn't really know how to land it when he took off the first time, but figured
it out. I'd be pretty frightened. Yeah.
It was a different time then as well.
There weren't all these regulations.
Right. These are small planes, by the way, just to let everyone know they're very small planes. But but he was an incredible person. And I'm not quite as brilliant as he was. Obviously, his brain was very capable of, you know, deducing things that he had just come into contact with. But what an amazing person.
And speaking of skills, I saw you had some specific skills listed for your own stunt work. Some of them pretty self-explanatory. Some of them I'm not 100% sure what they are. Can I rattle some off for you and have you explain them?
Yeah.
One was a face-off fall.
Yeah. So I love to give this example of like when you're a superhero. Hawkeye does this great, I think, in one of the Avengers. He jumps out facing out. And as he goes to shoot someone behind him, he turns and then he's looking back this way. So you almost jump out like a skydiver would, front out away from the building. And then as you fall, you turn your body and you land on your back.
Wow.
So that's a face off. And I always thought, great.
What was that called? Yeah.
It's always powerful when there's another version of that in one of the assassin movies. I don't remember. It might have been Tom Cruise. It might have been somebody else. But they literally jump and turn and fire their guns over the shoulder too. It's really epic. Mm. When done right, it looks amazing. So I enjoy that one. Yeah, I enjoy that.
Nice. Reminds me of some John Woo scenes. A lot of spinning around, a lot of gunplay stuff like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. shoot at them. Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks elegant and badass. And yeah, I'm always a big fan. And I do that one rather well.
Good to know. You also listed pratfalls.
Yeah, it's, you know, pratfalls, funny falls, like any type of smaller fall, trip fall, crash through a table thing. A lot of comedians do this. A lot of, you know, Buster Keaton did a lot of that too. Just standard falls on, you know, when you're walking and running or, you know, tripping over something, face first into the ground. Type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're mostly like for laughs, it seems.
I mean, it could be. Yeah. Like that's how I associate it. I could be, from what I've experienced. Yes. A pratfall is usually something comedic.
Okay.
But again, I'm not the end all be all. So if anyone out there is listening and they're like, CeCe doesn't know what she's saying. definitely take other people's advice as well. But for me, what I've ever experienced, especially on stage and everything like that, a pratfall is something quite humorous at times.
And how about PLF?
PLF is a landing. Almost like I don't want to say this too terribly wrong, but basically when you're coming in as a skydiver, well, mainly a lot of times when you have gear on you whenever you're in the military and you land feet first, but roll out of it so that you don't break your ankles.
Pretty much.
So when you're landing in a way, say, you know, jumping off something and you just roll onto your side, you like take it all in and let energy disperse away so that it's not going right into your ankles and legs.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you need those. So that's good. That's good.
Then, of course, now with parkour and all those things, I have not experienced the world of parkour I do very basics. So they have lots of different terms for amazing things that they do when they're coming off of those high buildings and they land and roll out of it to disperse the energy so that their knees and legs don't take the brunt of it. And they can just keep going and sort of having the inertia flow with them rather than working against it. They are amazing at that. So I have no information about that, but I'm in awe every time I see them do those things.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Pretty crazy stuff that they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, my knees would not.
And I got one more term listed here for you. Air ram training.
Okay. Air ram training. So an air ram, again, those with much more experience in the terms than I would have a beautifully eloquent way of describing this, but it's pretty much a plate that you're going to step on. And as soon as you step on it, it's going to spring out. So there's pounds of pressure that are hooked up to it, depending on your weight, your size, your ability. And you have to be very careful not to injure your knee on that, because if you don't step on it correctly and ride it, it can actually bite you. It can actually blow a knee or an ankle.
Because it's so fast.
But basically, basically ready for it's as soon as you step on it, that's the go. So you have to be sort of ready to ride that. And a lot of explosions. So you'll notice this in a lot of war movies or anything that has a big mortar that explodes in the ground and all the soldiers go flying. If they're not on a ratchet and they're running and they step on something and it flies them, that's an air ram. So a lot of wartime movies use the old explosion, fly away. And depending on how you ride it and depending on the pounds of pressure, those sorts of things, the height will be whatever it is, you know, what you have known during rehearsal, what you've set up, how your body is, how capable you are to ride it, et cetera, can change the flight as well, the direction and everything.
So a lot of protecting those knees and ankles, keeping those fresh.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's like, for me, that's everything. I don't know about anybody else, but I have to fight in heels all the time. So, you know, my ankles and knees, I'm very precious with, if you will.
That's true. That's something that maybe most stunt actors don't really have to do. Is it usually a lot of actually wearing heels for some of those stunts where you don't get to switch out to flats or something like that?
Yeah. So I am grateful for the amazing Marvel team and all of those who've built our outfits, because they have done specific boots for me or Lizzie when we have to do something. They have flats that they can make look like their heels, and we get to wear those when it's like most dangerous to land in, when we're boom, you know, those superhero landings that you've seen. So I'm thankful, but not every production has the ability to do that. So you know, the shoes that you get are sometimes what you get. I know I had to do a fight in some super high heels in the alley of a strip club at one point. Anyway, it's part of a show. And I was doubling an actress for a show, and that's just the footwear that we had. So I had to wrap my ankles and make sure I taped them and ready for some fighting in the concrete alleyway with these heels on. But yeah, so a lot of times I will do in my training, I don't know how anyone else does, but I like to focus on ankle strengthening techniques while I am training as well. Everything from ankle stability and strengthening everything all the way up to the knees, you know, and all of that. Well, I mean, I like to focus on the whole body, but really keeping those ankles strong. And my years as a ballet dancer very much helps me in that. So thank you to the dance world.
Yeah, I'm glad there's some crossover there in terms of that dance and even, you know, the theater background or the music background, as you mentioned before.
And working with partners too, I think.
Exactly. I am so grateful. I know that I don't mean to speak disparagingly about anyone in the industry. When I first got in, there seemed to be a little bit of hesitation towards anyone who had started in live show or as a dancer versus martial artist. And each person's story is their own. This is what I have to offer for that. And I highly respect everyone who had whatever journey they've had, whether they got in through martial arts training and competitions, or whether it was through dance or circus, Cirque du Soleil, live shows. All of it teaches you something, a little piece of the puzzle.
Right.
The puzzle the film industry is such a huge tapestry, if you will. And every bit of information helps and every bit of experience helps, in my opinion. And again, I know that there are others who know much more than me, but in my humble opinion, I am so grateful for my ballet and modern dance background. It has helped me immeasurably with things like wire work, body awareness, being able to sell a gun hit, tell the story with my body, and also partner work. The dance world, when I was working with dance partners, has helped me learn how to tell a story with another person and go off of the timing together and not just all about me. And that can make or break a fight scene, in my opinion, is if there's one person who's not working
not
with anyone
it.
Else. Yeah, yeah, not working with anyone else. And then the story's a little disjointed and it doesn't quite flow. Whereas you've seen amazing stories that are told together. And also you're more invested in both of those characters when the story is told together. And that's why I feel that my journey has really helped me in this industry, especially in the Marvel world, telling these amazing stories that have so many years of backstory and things to bring. And also when you're bringing together to life, you know, the comics, they're very specific in how they're drawn, you know? And so these different ways that you've got going, you want to bring those movements to life. So seeing how the body is, dance has really helped me do that.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. And yeah, you're right. I think comic books, especially because they're not in motion, they need to have those really striking poses and silhouettes as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then to find the middle ground of bringing that pose into the world, but also not making it so posy, because in the comic book world, it works. Sometimes in the real world, that pose
doesn't
might,
translate.
Yeah, it doesn't
much.
Translate exactly, but you know, because nobody, nobody quite flies quite
odd.
Like that. but it looks amazing in its genre and in its way, and then you just sort of modify it to where it's like, oh, this looks more natural when you're actually doing it in real life.
Real life. So,
yeah, I know the Black Widow film had some jokes about posing mid battle.
Yeah.
It was fun at it. That was good.
I love Florence Pugh and Charlotte and Florence. They're just joys to work with. They are good people. They are incredibly talented and so beautiful inside and out, you know? So it was just a joy to work with them.
Awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
And with that, I'd love to transition into some more in-depth breakdowns of a couple of different Marvel characters and scenes, things like that.
Yeah.
So Darren was telling me about some sort of like Scarlet Witch book or sort of onset Bible about all the
moves,
different movements
that you guys have.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that it's really helpful. It's sort of translated into a video sort of book now, because there'll be times when I'm on one set and Lizzie's on another set, and I have to quickly step into my tent or trailer and video some spells that I might want her to try and something. And as you've seen in hopefully everyone's seen WandaVision, and hopefully everyone who's watching has watched Infinity War, so I'm not spoiling anything.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen WandaVision. but yeah, so pertaining to some of the end sequences of like the blasts and everything like that, I would run to my trailer and like put a few, six or seven of them together for her, different movements, and then also show our amazing stunt fight coordinator, Shahab, and also our stunt coordinator, Mark Skizak, who's wonderful as well. And just to make sure everyone felt these were good moves, I would show Lizzie. She would tell me which ones she enjoyed the best, ones that fit with her body. And I also, from working with her, know certain things like that really work well with her body and movement, and ones that we shy away from because they just don't, we don't prefer them, you know? So I know that over the years as well in this book of moves, you know, if we want to throw something, we like to throw it with a strong stance and a strong arm, but we still also change it up occasionally. So we don't want to do the same thing over and over again. That's why we have this book, if you will, or this, this video collection of different moves. But it also helps because I will say, oh, it's very similar to the time when we did this in Infinity War, remember? And she goes, oh yeah, I know that one. So she knows that one, and it's changed a little bit, but it's similar to the way that we threw that one. So it's so helpful to have that back and forth with her, and also to continue on our journey that way. And that's, it's been very successful that way. So, and I just want to also be clear that I haven't always choreographed for her. Jenny White was also her choreographer for the spells casting for the earlier films as well. Who's, she's wonderful and amazing. And then
Age of Ultron, right?
Yes, Age of Ultron and those sorts of things. Civil War, I believe. And then she was on the beginning of Infinity War with us, and we were working with our fight coordinator as well. So it was like a whole group of us just coming together, and with Lizzie, it was so amazing and special. And then after that sort of happened, then we sort of went on this direction, and now I send things to her. She sends them back, Lizzie does, and she tells me which ones she likes, and then we go from there.
The blade. It stopped me from phasing.
Is that even possible?
This is supposed to be. Give up the stone.
I'm kind of wondering what it's like to choreograph. She has some like hand-to-hand combat, I know, especially in that Infinity War scene. And then you also have different moves that are from her powers. What's it like kind of mixing those two together?
I love it. And I know that Lizzie, I don't want to put words into her mouth. She's expressed that she's really enjoyed it as well when it's a combination of the two. And that's what was so great about Infinity War, as we've all seen in the Pillars. And that was actually, there was a longer fight there that we did film. But obviously timing of the movie, things get cut, no other reason. Everything was great. Everyone loved it. But it's just like the timing of it. We had to only use part of it. And there's like a whole nother section of when we were on the top of the church as well. And there was some fighting there. But I think the way they cut it was perfect. You know, I know we had a lot more that we gave, but I think the way that they edited it together was perfect. But yeah, so she really enjoys it. And that was, that's a testament to our fight choreographer and fight coordinator from Infinity War as well, Danny Hernandez and all that gang, you know, Sam Hargrave, James Young, Greg Rementor, all of those guys are amazing when it comes to that. And then also fighting against amazing partners like Anise and Kyle, they help you bring it, you know, and they have great timing. So that hand-to-hand is so easy. And then in the between, we would add a flourish of a conjure in those moments where we had a little more time. So it's great to meld the two, and it brings things to a new level, I think. So that's my favorite, is those sequences. So
yeah, that's, I think that's a personal favorite of mine for that character, because like you're saying, that blending is so interesting. I remember one particular beat from that Infinity War fight scene. It was essentially like a sort of suplex, but ramped up to 11, where you're doing this like back breaking, you know, bending over, arching your back, and then throwing someone and they explode in a truck or something like
that. Yeah. So we take Proxima and we just go, And, like, that was one of our favorite moves.
Hands off.
And I did that part.
Oh,
and
great.
You only get one go at that.
Oh, yeah.
because
you can't do it again.
you can, but it's a huge reset and it's very expensive because the special effects guys have that very big burning truck rigged to go break in half as if something just smashed through it. And so timing wise, we did a couple of timing rehearsals. Sam Hargrave was the stunt coordinator for that. And he was there and he was making sure everything was good to go. And so we did a couple of timing rehearsals first to make sure everyone was going to go whenever I did the thing. And, you know, also in my mind, I'm thinking, don't fall over when you do this, like strike the pose and don't like fall out of it, you know, make sure it's strong. And so we did a couple time rehearsals, everything went great. And then we hit the go button and we got it and went, and we got it in one. If I remember, I'll have to ask Sam if I'm remembering correctly, but I think we got it on the first time and they were like, all right, that was great. So yeah. And then of course we do some coverage of Lizzie as well. Once we get the big, big wide that has me in it for some of those moves, then we'll cut to close-up shots of her, what she's experiencing, what she's feeling about this situation. And she knows that Vision is being attacked and all that. So, you know, we got those amazing moments that she brings to life in that moment of like necessity of getting up there and saving the person that she loves. So I just, that whole fight sequence is very special to me. Everything from the experience of Infinity War itself to everyone that I was working with to the relationship that I was building with Lizzie at the time. It's one of my all-time favorite job experiences. Mm-hmm. And filming in Scotland for 2 months. I mean, Scotland.
Oh yeah, that too.
It was incredible, the whole thing. So it's very special to me.
Good place to fight aliens and things
like that. I mean, yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's a good place for an ambush.
Yeah. Yeah. And then going from Infinity War, maybe most recent Scarlet Witch released project being WandaVision.
We are an unusual couple, you know?
Oh, I don't think that was ever in question.
One of the biggest differences, of course, is that the other projects are feature films. This one's a limited series.
Yeah.
Did you feel a difference when you were doing the work between those two formats?
I did and didn't. We all talked about it. It felt like just a longer, more episode of a big movie. Obviously, budget constraints are different, so certain things have to be done differently. Mm-hmm. And we might not have as much time to prep as we would for a feature film. But I have huge respect. Kevin Feige is amazing. He knows what he's doing. He's an incredible person. So he's such an inspiration. He has these visions and he knows what should happen and which ones should be series, which ones should be feature films. But yeah, so it was a little different. And we did end up, mainly because of COVID, the COVID break that happened, we ended up working 6 day weeks all the way at the end, which is a little more intense to get things done. And also, you know, because of that break, we had to change some things in some of the battles. And again, I'm not sure what I'm allowed to talk about of what used to be. And
yeah,
what isn't.
Yeah, of course.
Honestly, COVID changed things. We know that to be true. And we have to protect everyone. Everyone is equally important. Everyone's safety comes first. So, you know, a lot of those fight sequences that we might have hoped were hand-to-hand, face-to-face, ended up having to be changed for now. You know, obviously now things are loosening up, but at the time we were one of the first productions. Mm-hmm. We were in the first wave of productions to come back from COVID. And so there were a lot of questions as to, is this going to work? Is this going to keep everyone safe? But we modified some of the things in the fights. Shahab did a great job, you know, changing that, but still keeping it intense and keeping everyone safe. So I think it was a success, but yeah, it did change some things. And the format also doesn't allow you as much time to prepare as a feature film would, but we still, I think, created something amazing and just equally the same. Like the style of it is, it just basically looks like a Marvel movie split up into.
Yeah. It really does. It really does.
It's separate episodes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And for that style of fight scene, again, you know, partly the WandaVision power set, partly the COVID distance concerns, a lot of it is projectile based shooting things from your hands or throwing objects across the way. How much of that are you involved for, given that it's, you know, when she's not taking the hit, it's a lot of sort of hand choreography as opposed to flying around and kicking?
I did it all. We did it all. We basically, are you meaning in performance? Like how involved was I performance wise? Well, we had her with all of her close-up coverage doing all of the sequence that we created, the different blasts and the different sequences, almost like a dance, and if you will, because it's in call and response to what the other character is doing in the story, what the lines that they have, the dialogue. Basically, when it's even when she's performing it, I've tested out the rig. Our stunt riggers, incredible stunt riggers, have rigged it and fully tested it before she even does anything on it. Same with Paul Bettany, any actor, even if they're going to do some of it, we always test it and make sure everything is safe first. And then we will line up as well. We'll do it while they line up camera so that we can show them how it's going to be, so that they can get the rhythm of the camera move if they have one before we get the actor in it, so that they can just concentrate on giving all of their energy to that performance when we're rolling. So even if I'm not performing, say the first couple of episodes, and not a lot of stunts were in it, obviously. I was a part of every episode, though, whether I was there just safetying or making sure she felt good or testing something out for her or showing it to her and then standing by and ready with pads or anything like that, all the way down to doing full performances. So other times when she'd go to the other unit or she was on the other unit performing all of the other scenes, I would do the gags. So the fly away, you know, that's me, face replacement, you know? So we only had one day to get that, and that was the day. And so that was going to be, you know, how it is. So it's definitely a team effort of all the different departments coming together and creating something fabulous. And hopefully you can't tell the difference between when it's me and her.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, I really didn't. I didn't even realize there was,
I couldn't even
face
tell.
Replacement going on for those kinds of things. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Face replacement. And also, but see, I know this sounds horrible, but I know my backside. So I always,
I'm so like, you probably always point it out. You're like,
that's professionally my backside right there. Yep. Like, and I also know when it has been me on the front side, cause I also know which ones I did that weren't able to be gotten with her. So I know which ones they've replaced my face on, but she is incredible. She performed so many of those wire gags flying. She was in a harness every day for a lot of that. And so I am so proud of her. She is incredible and she performs perfectly. And I love it every time.
Awesome.
Don't look into the past.
Okay, you got a plan or shall I just stay duck and cover?
My plan was to drive us away.
Well, your plan sucks.
Could we touch really quickly on your Black Widow experience with that full-length Black Widow showcase that was there, or any favorite action gags or action scenes that you were a part of? Mm-hmm.
So
Taskmaster scenes, yeah.
Andy Lister, incredible performer, as well as Darren Knopf as well, was in the suit as well. Basically, I'm so thankful to be a part of that. The part of the scenes that I made, I'm in a little bit of some of the sequences, like the beginning of the safe house fight with the gun back and forth and in the very beginning. But after they leave the kitchen and go through the door, that gnarly gag, that was Mickey through the door with the leg into the, that whole scene. Yeah, that was Mickey. And then in there, that was Mickey. But the sequences that I did, I loved. Basically the rooftop in Budapest, running, sliding down all of that, running along the edge. That was 12 stories up. Rob Inch is a fabulous coordinator. I love him and his team. He's amazing. He kept us safe. He and the rigging team, they're awesome. And we're basically on these kind of old, broken down Budapest buildings. And there were cones that were out like along the edge. And they're like, so don't go where those cones are because that's not sturdy. You might fall through. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm looking at where the cones are. And then they go, okay, we're about to roll. And they take the cones away. And I'm like, oh, okay, gotta remember where those were.
Where were they? So, yeah.
So this was a game of memory that no one told me. No.
Yeah.
We did a lot of running in a 96 degree heat, full leather jacket, sliding down those hot, beautiful roofs in Budapest. Mm. And then in the train station as well, sliding down the middle of that thing that every kid wants to do. Is to slide down the middle of the escalator.
Oh, yeah.
Every kid wants to do that. 100%. And it was a huge, awesome one. So we got to do that. Me and Michaela McAllister, she doubled Florence Pugh. Amazing.
Yeah.
And she also stepped in whenever I had a bit of an injury during that filming experience on my ankle. She actually stepped in and did some of the stuff that I was slated to do for the skydiving. Not the actual skydiving. Those are professional skydivers. But we also supplemented it with some wire work and some robo-moco arm. So like one actor would be in the robo-moco arm, the other would be in some wires coming down to get some close-ups and swing around and do a lot of that. It was incredible. I had done the rehearsals and some pre-vising, and then she stepped in to do the really good stuff right at the end there. So I love all those girls. It's an amazing girl power, incredible you know, combination of talents and wonderful people. So, but yeah, so some of my favorites were in the Budapest, sliding down the hot roofs and
hot roofs.
Yeah, no, it was awesome though. It was so cool.
Nice. Yes, yeah. Yes, it was awesome. It looked awesome on our end. I'm sure it was awesome on your end too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm thankful to be a part of it again. To everybody who let me be a part of that, it was amazing.
Nice. And we have one last quick segment here that we like to close out on. Yeah. It's called the 5 Second Fight Club, where Darren and I offer you some hypothetical fights, and then you have 5 seconds to tell us who would win and why.
Oh my God. Oh, oh
so
no.
It's kind of like a lightning round. Okay.
Oh no. I'm going to fail.
Yeah. Hurts.
First one is Proxima Midnight versus Taskmaster.
Oh, Taskmaster.
Oh, that Taskmaster. Was easy. That was easy.
Yeah, Taskmaster.
Yeah, that was way too easy.
No, yeah. less Proxima Midnight. No, Taskmaster for sure, hands down.
Okay.
All right. Next one is Ripley from Aliens versus Sarah Connor from Terminator 2.
Oh my God, you can't know. I mean, it would have to. Oh, that's a tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have to be Ripley because she's dealt with aliens. But it's tough because
okay.
Sarah Connor dealt with like
it's cyborgs. The Terminator. Yeah.
I know, man. They're equally crazy. But no, I'm gonna have to go with Ripley just because she was the first one that I saw that she was imprinted on my brain. Oh, first.
Okay.
No hard feelings for Sarah Connor.
Next one is Black Widow versus Scarlet Witch.
I'm going to have to go with Scarlet Witch. No, oh. And I love, going to have to go with Scarlet Witch on that. She literally has the power to create and destroy. So
yeah, you're right. Totally. Yeah, she's really overpowered.
Yeah. And Black Widow would be real savvy about it and probably survive. Mm-hmm. But Scarlet Witch, I mean.
True.
The next one is Justin Eaton versus U.S. agent John Walker, played by Wyatt Russell.
Justin Eaton. Justin Eaton would win that fight. He would hands down win that fight because he also helped create all that fighting. Yeah.
He knows the moves.
He knows the moves because he created them, yeah. So, yeah. Against Wyatt Russell. No, I love Wyatt, but yeah, Justin would
win. We had a feeling you'd pick that. Awesome. Yeah.
I don't know, and I also he's
just
around.
A hunch.
He's over there. Babe, I chose you.
Okay, nice. Yeah, that was the last matchup.
All right. The best one.
That's our segment. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been a joy. And again, I hope I didn't speak incorrectly about the many things that are in the stunt world, but this is just from my experience. Sharing what I know.
That's great.
And obviously many other people have other experiences too. So thank you for having me.
Hey, yeah, of course. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, hopefully we'll chat again soon.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram @actionfilmmakingpodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.